This is an odd time of year for us. Next week will be even odder. There's an uncomfortable feeling of disconnect at times, a feeling of being out of kilter or perhaps just confused. All around us, the celebration of Christmas festivities is in full flight, but there are no nativity scenes in here. Let alone trees or baubles. And we haven't sung any Christmas carols yet, and we won't until Tuesday night. The closest we've got was singing Joy to the World, but that's actually an Advent hymn with no Christmas references in it. It's just somehow slipped into the Christmas canon. One of the things that makes this feel so odd is that we're all kind of living double lives at the moment. When we are here in the church, it's not Christmas yet, but the rest of the time we're just as involved and just as dominated by it as everyone else. I know that in my house there's lots of wrapping of presents going on. There was a big family function last night. We're working out what festive food we are supposed to be contributing to the Christmas dinner and searching for lost recipes and Kris Kringle allocations and making hasty trips to the shops and all those kind of things. And then we walk in here and there's no sign of Christmas to be seen. It's as though we're in denial, pretending that it's not happening, which is not a bad idea, but yeah.
Oh, I mean, it should be happening.
Next week, it will feel even more odd, because for the next two Sundays, we will walk past the discarded and dying Christmas trees on the curbs, sure and certain signs that Christmas is over for another year, and then we'll walk in here and be singing Christmas carols and telling stories of the birth and infancy of Jesus and praying before the icon of the Nativity. And if you're anything like me, which I don't wish on you, but if you are, one part of your brain will be wondering what the neighbours are thinking as they hear the sounds of our Christmas carols wafting through the walls on January the 5th. What are those weirdos doing? Wasn't 6 weeks of Christmas carols in the shops enough for them? They don't even know to stop when Christmas is over? I know for me it feels a little odd each year, and even a bit awkward and embarrassing. So what do we think we're doing, and why? Are we just being obstinate and perverse? Or worse still, do you just have a pastor who's obstinate and perverse liturgical fundamentalist who is vainly trying to resurrect an obsolete practice of the 12 days of Christmas and inflict this awkwardness on all of you? I'll have to leave that latter question for you to answer yourselves. But what can be said in support of this practice? I've been reflecting a bit on the feeling of the oddness and weirdness of it, especially the oddness that is coming next week. And I actually think there's something quite important and quite valuable in the oddness itself. It's something that I think makes some connections with the experience of Joseph that we heard about in our gospel reading a little earlier. You see, the point of not observing Christmas in the church until the traditional 12 days is not primarily a matter of being fundamentalist about the calendar. It's also not that we're just doing a variation on those kind of Christmas in July parties that some people have, planning to do exactly the same thing but at a different time for the obstinate purpose of being right about the niceties of the calendar. Instead, the point is actually the question of whether it is the same thing. Is what we are going to try to do next week just the same thing as everyone else is doing this week, and we're just out of step by a week or two? Or are they in fact two different things, which are more easily understood and more fully experienced if they're kept apart from one another? Historically, there were festivities at this time of year in most of the world, and certainly in most of Europe, before the creation of the church's celebration of Christmas. The older festivities were mostly associated with the solstice. in the Northern Hemisphere, it was the winter solstice, the longest night of the year. The decorated trees and Santa Claus and many of the festive foods and decorations all come from various solstice traditions and originally had nothing at all to do with the Christian faith or with the church. Now, there's some dispute among the historians as to whether the church invented Christmas in order to try and Christianise those solstice festivities or whether the dating of Christmas at the same time is just a coincidence. But whether it was planned or not, the two have become merged and the various symbols have been mixed up together. So now everyone thinks that the solstice tree is a Christmas tree and we're all a bit confused about what that tree has got to do with baby Jesus, but we're sure there must be some connection. There actually isn't, other than on the calendar. But in the last century, with the massive commercialisation of the Christmas solstice celebration, the shopping patterns have actually shifted the festival on the calendar. So now it ends on Christmas Day, whereas the church's Christmas season has traditionally started on Christmas Eve and ends on the Feast of Epiphany on January the 6th. So the two merged festivals have actually grown apart again, at least on the calendar. But it's not as simple as that, is it? Because they've both pinched each other's symbols and taken them with them as it moved. So the solstice Christmas has pinched the nativity scenes and the angels and the nativity carols, and it's quite common to see solstice trees and baubles and even Santa Clauses in the churches. And in most people's minds, including most of us, it's almost impossible to separate the two now. A scrambled egg can't be unscrambled, so to speak. So many churches have done the obvious thing and simply gone with the flow. And they're celebrating the nativity of our Lord now, and next week they won't be. It will be over. And I have absolutely no doubt that that would be easier and kind of more comfortable. It would feel a lot less odd. And there wouldn't be that awkward and slightly embarrassed feeling when we're still singing carols in early January. The question is the cost worth it? Just as you can't make a pavlova out of a scrambled egg, I think it's pretty near impossible to make any sense of the sacred celebration of the Nativity when it is all scrambled up with solstice trees and Santa Clauses and shopping frenzies. And while I don't think we have got a hope in hell of getting the nativity symbols out of the solstice festivities, we can observe Christmas at its traditional time and therefore thereby experience it on its own as a different thing. But I do acknowledge that the difficulty of that is that by the time we're singing Christmas carols in the church, they've been done to death in the shops and we can feel completely sick of them. And everyone else is sick of them too, which is why they think we're so weird still singing them in early January. And it's because everyone else thinks that they're the same thing that we feel awkward and embarrassed. Like, we don't feel weird about celebrating Pentecost when nobody else does, precisely because nobody else does. But Christmas, it looks and feels as though we're just confused and mistaken, and we get more self-conscious about that. Which is where Joseph comes in. You're wondering if I was ever going to get to him. Joseph also had to make a tough choice between going with the expected flow or being faithful and feeling completely on the outer. He too had to deal with awkwardness and self-consciousness in order to wait for what God was calling him to. And it was a lot more costly to him. When Joseph found out that his fiancée Mary was pregnant, his first impulse was to do the expected thing in the gentlest and most decent way he could. And that was quietly call off the engagement and sever ties with her. Joseph was no gynecologist, but he did know how these things happened. And since he knew that she hadn't slept with him, clearly she'd been sleeping with somebody else. So he wasn't going to go through with marrying her. And no one would have expected any different of him. Of course, even apart from the sense of hurt and betrayal he would be feeling, Joseph had his own reputation to think of. And sticking with Mary would have been a no-win for him. If it became known that his girl was carrying someone else's child, he would be humiliated. And if it was thought that the child was his, then his reputation as a respectable and honourable young man was shot, since they weren't married yet. Premarital sex might not cause much angst nowadays, but it sure did then. Either way, he loses. So the only right thing for him to do is sever ties with Mary. And his only choices are whether to make a public issue of it or not. If he does, he draws more attention to his own embarrassment, and there's a possibility that Mary will be stoned to death. He's not up for that. So he opts to try and make the best of a bad situation and cut off the betrothal quietly. Mary will still be disgraced and pretty much left unmarriable, but if she keeps herself and her illegitimate child behind closed doors, she should at least survive. But then a messenger from the Lord turns up in a dream and tells Joseph that it was God who impregnated his girl and that he should go ahead and marry her. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm Joseph and someone turns up and confesses to having impregnated my fiancée, I don't much care if it happens to be God. I'm not happy about it. And I'm certainly not taking orders from him, especially if those orders are essentially about covering up for him, shouldering the blame myself and raising his illegitimate child as though it was my own. You caused the problem, God. Fix your own mess. Count me out. But Joseph seems to be a man of rather more nobility of spirit than me, and he's up for the challenge of cooperating with whatever the hell it is that God is up to here. So for Joseph, what he learns in the dream is that God is offering him what he wanted originally, that is Mary as his wife, but now she's going to come to him as, in the eyes of the society around them, tarnished goods. And so if Joseph is going to be faithful to God and faithful to Mary, he has to endure that awkwardness, that embarrassment, the self-consciousness, even humiliation. He has to wait and hope and pray and trust that there might be some value in this, some good to come out of it, to make things all worthwhile. And his faithful waiting and his bearing of the social cost is proof of the integrity of the man who we have remembered all down these years. He did what was right, even when it looked all wrong to everyone around him. Tuesday night's Christmas Eve service will feel all right, but by next Sunday, nativity scenes and Christmas carols will feel like tarnished goods, ready to be left in the gutter with the trees. They will have been so prostituted in the marketplaces for so long that we will feel awkward and stigmatised to be any longer associated with them. But perhaps it's only then, under the weight of that embarrassment, that we, with Joseph, will have any chance of being captured and liberated by the scandalous truth that is Emmanuel, God with us. And I reckon that's worth waiting for.